So the Gemara in Bracha on Daf Chet Amud Aleph says to Ma'arava, right, in Eretz Yisrael, Kinasiv Inish Itata, when a man would get married, Amri Lehachi, they would say the following to him. Okay, they would say the following to the person who got married, they'd say, Matzah or Motzei. Okay, is it a case of Matzah or a case of Motzei? Or I mean, I'm interjecting a few words, but that's basically what it means. Do we apply Matzah or Motzei? What does that refer to? Matzah, as it says, Matzah Isha, Matzah Tov, V'yifek Mitzvah Me'Hashem, which is a very positive pasuk, right? Matzah Isha, Matzah Tov, person who found, a woman found good, right, etc. Or Motzei, or do we apply Motzei, or, you know, should we say Motzei, as it says, Motzei Animar Mimavet Ataisha V'Gomer, in Kohelet. So, which is clearly a very negative description. So,
can we go over the descriptions again?
Yeah, the matzah is matzah isha matzah tov, right? Person who found a good woman found something, you know, really good. Okay, and motzei ani is where Shlomo says that motzei ani mami mavet, I find bitterer than death a woman who is, then it goes through a description, a woman who is, you know, who is ensnaring mechule. Okay. So the question, what does this mean? Right? The person got married, what are they saying? What is the point of, you know, this, do we say matzah or motzei? And because we have a pasuk, right? Because we have two psukim, both from the same shoresh, right? Of umso, and somehow, you know, do we apply the positive one or the negative one? What is that all about? What does that do with matzah or motzei? And what is it that the Gemara is trying to say? So, Ezra Hashem, after we understand some of these other sources, we will understand what this Gemara is saying as well. Okay? It's actually a very interesting Gemara, but we'll come back to it. Let's keep it in the back of our minds. Okay? Let's now look at the Gemara in Sota. It's a great Gemara. Gotta love this Gemara, right? Great Gemara in Sota. On the source sheet. Okay? I'm going to have it to my Sota, the very beginning of the Masechet Sota. Okay. So, it's a great story behind this Gemara, but anyhow, just give you the very brief version. But before my wife and I were going out, this is before we started going out, we were in the same community for Sukkot, and she had to drop by to visit and decide we were going to learn something. She said, okay, what should we learn? So I actually gave her, you know, I said, well, learn whatever you want. She said, I don't care, whatever, pick something. So I picked this Gemara. She had no idea why, of all things, I picked this Gemara, but I think it's, in retrospect, somewhat self-evident. In any case, the Gemara says like this. Listen to this Gemara, it's fascinating. Okay, I know you prepared already, but let's try and go through it carefully. Okay, v'amar Rav Barachana, amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'kashin lezavkan kikriyat yamsuf, shene'amar Elohim Moshiv yichidim beita motzi asirim b'kosharot. Okay, so I don't need to get too involved in the drasha, but the basic point is that Rabbi Yochanan says kashin lezavkan kikriyat yamsuf. Okay, that it is as difficult to be mizavei, to match up a man and a woman as kriyat yamsuf, right? Says the Gemara, ini, is that so? Va'amar Rav Yehuda Marav, arbam yom kodem yitzira tavlad, bat kol yotzei tvomeret, bat ploni l'ploni, be ploni l'ploni, tzada ploni l'ploni. Says the Gemara, lo kasha, habizug rishon, habizug sheni. Okay? There are different ways of understanding this Gemara. And what we're going to do is certainly not the only way to approach the Gemara. Two supplementary sources. But we're still on the sheet, okay? So, there are different ways of understanding this Gemara. And what I'm going to suggest is not the only way. But it's what I think the Gemara means, and I'd like to share it with you. I think there's basis for this in Rishonim. It's a beautiful idea. So let's start with the following. What is the analogy of Kriyat Yamsuf? Why is it Kashin Lezavgan Kikriyat Yamsif. Why definitely Kriyat Yamsif? We have a lot of Nisim, and first of all, it's hard to understand what exactly Kashan Lazap and Kriyat Yamsif. What does it mean? It's Kasher Kikriyat Yamsif, right? Miracles are not difficult for God. For that matter, they're not harder or easier, right? It's not harder or easier for Hashem to do a big nes or a small. What does it mean that it's kashim lezavgan ki kriyat yamsif? Why is that a particularly hard nes, if that's what it means? What is it trying to tell us? Why of all the nesim that we have, is that particularly the one that is picked out? Yeah. Okay, could be. I'm not familiar with that, but it's certainly possible. Yeah, I mean, I take your word for it. Do you know where? Okay. So what are you saying? So therefore, that Kriyat Yamsuf is a symbol for husband and wife getting together. Okay, beseder. Of course, that begs the question: why specifically is? But yeah, okay.
So
why is that analogous to Kriyat Yamsuf? What are you saying? It's a nice idea, but what does that do with Kriyat? So why is being mezavig them like Kriyat Yamsuf?
Because with Kriyat Yamsuf, God decides what's together and what's apart, but Kelly said, but He doesn't decide when it comes to marriage.
So then it's not comparable to Kriyat Yamsuf.
It is, but in a paradoxical way.
Okay. Mr. Yeah?
Maybe it has to do with the Amuna aspect of Kriyat Yamsuf, and that Kriyat Yamsuf, is evil and happen unless you also have a will to jump in and have your Amuna.
That's interesting. Okay. You have a lot of good suggestions here. We'll ask a basic question. We'll see if we can perhaps... I think, along the line, at least some of the suggestions, but maybe take it a little bit further, and particularly in terms of how the flow of the Gemara. What is miraculous about Kriyat Yamsuf? Why is it that Kriyat Yamsuf is miraculous? What principle in nature does Kriyat Yamsuf go against?
Gravity. Maybe, I suppose.
Kind of exactly, but I think it's something more fundamental. That's not fundamental than gravity, mostly, but more fundamental to what to the nature of the nace.
Nature of nature.
Okay, what's the nature? Right, the nature of water, right, is to be cohesive. Right? If you spill water into I've heard that the way that they did the scene of Kriyat Yamsuf in the Ten Commandments. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard that. They basically took water and poured it into some receptacle that had water pouring inside, and what they did was then ran the thing backwards. Okay, because the natural tendency, if you pour water into something, it's going to come together, it's going to become one, because it's not going to stay, you're not going to end up with, a piece of water on this side of the bowl and a piece of water on this side of the bowl, right, another batch over there. Pour water into a bowl, into a cup, whatever, it will become one, because that's the nature of water, to be one, right? The miraculous nature of Kriyat Yamsuf is that something, namely water, which is normally one, was split into two, correct? Yes? So, perhaps, we can put together two suggestions that were made. Perhaps the point is that, and see how this fits with the flow of the Gemara in just a moment, is why I'm suggesting it, that perhaps what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that the nature of the chiddush of being mezaveg is that is the same idea as Kriyat Yamsuf, but just in the opposite direction. Why? Because Kriyat Yamsuf defied what was natural because it was taking that which is normally one and dividing it into two, right? And making it into two separate things. Whereas zivugim are just the opposite, right? It's taking that two separate people that are, you know, two individuals and making of them one. You hear that? Yeah.
Yeah, but why would it be compared to Yom Suf if it's the opposite nature?
Because it's the exact same idea, it's just moving in the opposite direction.
Like if it's normal for water to be cohesive,
right,
and one. So
no,
if
but
it's not.
The thing is that by Kriyat Yom Suf, the point is that which is naturally one was made into two. This is the exact same thing, it's just moving in the opposite direction. Suggestion. No, it's agreed. Suggestion. Look at the next statement. And the Gemara then questions it, says, Ini, is that really so? Vamrav Yehuda Marav, Arbam Yom Kodem Yisir HaTavlad, Bat Kol Yotzeipo Meret, Bat Ploni Leploni, etc. We'll stick to Bat Ploni Leploni, that's enough for us for the moment. So, Bat Ploni Leploni, so therefore, what does that mean? So let's start with this. What's Arbam Yom Kodem Yisir HaTavlad? When is Yitzirat Havlad? What says Yitzirat Havlad is
after 30 days.
After close. After 40 days. 40 days. Okay, so the Gemara says that Yitzirat Havlad is 40 days after conception. So what does Arbam Yom Kodem Yitzirat Havlad mean? It's another way of saying what?
Conception.
Right, at the time of conception. Meaning that what Rav Yehuda Marav is really saying, if you say Arbam Yom Kodem Yitzirat Havlad, Ba Kol Yotzei Vamer, Ba Ploni Ploni, what is it really saying? It's saying that the two people, the man and the woman, were created milchatchila as two halves of one person, right? That's the implication. What Rabbi does that saying, if it's Avraham Yom Kodem Yitzirat Havlad, what's Avraham Yom Kodem Yitzirat Havlad? From the very beginning of a person's creation, from the moment of conception, saying that initially they're created with the intent of Baploni Leploni. What that means is that, are they milchatchila two or are they milchatchila one? Right? So that's the stira in the Gemara, right? That's the ini. That's why the Gemara says it's a contradiction between what Rav says and what, not contradiction, but a tension between what Rav says and what Rabbi Yochanan says, right? On the one hand, Rav is telling us that they're not really two, and they're not really two, they're really one. They're created milchatchila to be one, so it's the most natural thing in the world. So what do you mean kasha lezatim to create yam? It's not kasha at all. It's the easiest thing in the world. It's not. It's on the contrary. It's just like the water, where the natural, even if they're separate at a certain point, but the natural state is being one, right? So there's a direct contradiction between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav. Not to worry, there are other interpretations of the Gemara, but that's what I think the Gemara means. Anyhow, so what does the Gemara answer? So the Gemara gives a very, very important answer. And that is, Lokasha Habizug Rishon Habizug Shein. Now, there are different interpretations in Mefarshim of what this means. But the way I would translate it, and again, I'm not saying everyone agrees to this, however, I suggest that what this means is that I would translate Rishon and Sheini as primary and secondary. And what I think the Gemara is saying is the following. The Rambam discusses this Gemara, right? Avraham Yom Kodem Yitzirat Havlad, etc. And the Rambam basically deals with the following question, right? This tshuva of the Rambam that you all saw, basically what does the Rambam deal with? He says that, what does it mean that Avraham Yom Kodem Yitzirat Havlad, Ba Kol Yotzei Vamer, Ba Ploni Leploni? Does that mean that we have no choice about who we're going to marry? That mean that we don't get to decide whether or not we want to marry a particular person? So the Rambam's answer to that is definitively what?
Presumed.
Absolutely, we do get to choose. Right? It says absolutely. It says why? Why? Because there's a basic principle in Torah, right, which says we find in Chumash, we find in Chazal, and basic philosophical points as well. The Rambam takes this as being like, you know, the starting point. One sees throughout the writings of the Rambam, this is a very, very, very fundamental idea in the thought of the Rambam, that, as Chazal say, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyarat shamayim. Says the Rambam, what does that mean? Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyarat shamayim. It means that Hashem controls things like you know, like what the, you know, natural events and all kinds of things is much of what happens God controls. However, there's one thing that God doesn't control, and that is issues of free choice. Okay, that we have free will, that we get, that we decide whether we're going to do the right thing or the wrong thing, something better or something worse, something good or something better, something not so good or even worse, right? All these kind of decisions. And the Rambam says, who you marry is certainly in the category of Yirat Shamayim. In other words, whether a person marries this person, that person, is very much a part of our having, you know, the ability to make decisions about our own life. And that's part of Bechira Chavshit. That's HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mirat Shamayim. And therefore, the Rambam says, certainly the idea of the Gemara is not to say that it's decreed that we're necessarily going to marry this person or not. Okay, one of the things that's very interesting about this tshuva is also the whole way the Rambam approaches the issue is very, very paradigmatic. This is really how the Rambam operates. And that is that, you know, there are lots of sources that deal with any particular issue. And you're going to always find, you know, a statement here, a statement there. But you have to look at what is the ikar? What are the basic major statements that you have? What makes sense philosophically, theologically, what's supported by the major, you know, thrust of what we have by the most clear and basic statements? And then you have other statements, okay, so either you interpret them in light of that yisod, or if you can't interpret them, so you say, okay, so some things I don't understand, but the yisod remains the yisod. And that's how the Rambam operates always, right? Always operates like this. So the Rambam says the basic yisod, as the Rambam says in Mishnah Torah, as he says in Shemar Pari, that throughout his writing, everywhere, including this tshuva, the basic yisod is HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mirat Shamayim, that we have free will, that God doesn't decide for us who we're going to marry.
How does he explain
that? So what does the Gemara mean? So I'd like to explain the Gemara the way that I think, in line with the approach of the Rambam. I think this is the pshat of the Rambam per se, but this is in line with the Rambam. And I think that this is really, this is very, look, what is the Gemara saying? The Gemara, I think, is saying the following. That we have two ideas that are both true. One idea is the idea that's expressed by the Ravid in Balei HaNefesh, and then picked up by the Ramban in his Perash on Chumash. That's idea number one. Right? The Ramban says, this comes from the Ravid in Balei HaNefesh, the Ramban says as follows. That on the pasuk of Vayu Levasar Echad, so he says like this. He says Al Ken Yazov Ish Et Aviv Et Imo V'Devak Vishto Vayu Levasar Echad Ruach Hakosh Omeret Ken Lesor Rayog Bnei Noach Vayu Levasar Echad Havla Notzar Yidei Shnehem V'Sham Nasa B'Saram Echad Lashon Rashi. What does it mean Vayu Levasar Echad? That they produce one. They produce a child that is the product of both of them and that unites, synthesizes aspects of both of them. Lashon Rashi, that's how Rashi explains it. Says the Ramban, Ve'im b'zeh tam, ki, I didn't put the whole Ramban in, oh my goodness. Ki gama be'ima b'chaya yu v'asar ha b'toldotam. I didn't put the rest of the Ramban in. Gevalt. How could that be? Oh my goodness. This is terrible. Let's read the rest of the Ramban. I don't know what happened to me. My apologies. I don't know what happened. Somehow it was like in reformatting. I think like some of the Ramban just got lost. I apologize. Please bear with me. Let me read the rest of the Ramban. Again, the Ramban is preceded by the Ravid in Balei HaNefesh. I'll take a look. Okay, so I bet. Let's read the rest. I can't believe this. Gotta get more sleep. Okay, here we go. Ramban, here we go. Okay. V'hanachom be'enai. I left out the main part. V'hanachom be'enai. This is the continuation of that same Ramban. Okay? Per be'er pasuk chavdal. V'hanachom be'enai. Ki ha'beima v'achaya ein lahem dveikud b'nekevo tehen. Aval yavoa zachar al ezen nekeva shimsa v'yelchul lahem. M'pnei zamar katuv v'avur shnekevat hadam haita etzem me'atzamav v'asar mi'psaro v'davakba v'aita v'chayko kivsaro. V'yachbots ba liyota tamid imo kasher hayazeb adam husam tivo b'toldotav liyota liyot hasfarim mehem dveikim b'nishotehem uzum et avihem vet imam v'roim et nishotehem ki ilu hein imam l'basar echad v'chein ki achenu b'sarenu hu al kol she'er b'saro, meaning hakrovim b'mishpacha yikru she'er basar v'hine yazov she'er aviv v'imo Ukrova tam, the year eh, she ishto krova lo mehem. Okay? So the Ramban says, what's the pshat by you, levasar echad? It means that unlike the other creatures that were created, zachar and nekeva separately, right? The reason that the isha was created from Adam was in order to set a pattern, to create a model for human beings, that we should view ourselves, we should view the husband and wife unit as really being one person. And that, this is the idea, obviously, that's echoed in Chazal, right? Ishto kegufo, v'chulei v'chulei. But an idea that has all kinds of ramifications. The idea that as Ramban says, yul basar chad, in the sense that a person considers, you know, a man considers his wife to be his closest relative, even though all these natural relatives, and then suddenly she jumps to the front of the line. The point is that there's this concept of that really there's this pattern in mankind, starting with Adam and Chava, of really being one person. Okay, that's what the Ravid, remember, is basically quoting the Ravid. Okay, he doesn't tell you that, but he's quoting the Ravid. You can buy an official thing. Okay, so the point is that the Ravid / Ramban say that this is the nature, or at least the potential that's placed in mankind, to be able to have this type of relationship that is really an idea of being really one person. If it's an idea that you mentioned in different sources, I'm not going through all of them right now, but the idea of kind of being, you know, two neshamot in one guf. I said that backwards. One neshama in two bodies. That's what I meant to say. Okay. So the point being that this is the idea that the Ramban says over here. Okay? And I think it's also what we mean when we say, although there are other interpretations, but I think this is what we mean when we say in the Brach of Sheva Brachot, we say Asher Yatzar Tadam Bitzalmo, Bitzalm Dmut Tavnito, Vitkin lo mimenu binyana de'ad. Right? So what does it mean, Vitkin lo mimenu binyana de'ad? So one can interpret based on the Rav and the Ramban that Vitkin lo mimenu binyana de'ad. That since Chava was created mimenu, right? Therefore, the relationship between Adam and Chava and the pattern for mankind has the potential to be binyana de'ad, to be a permanent relationship, not just to be a transient relationship. Okay? It's basically the idea of the Ramban and the Rive. They don't talk about this per se, but I think it follows from what they said. Yes, please.
So everybody that's married in this life is simply found.
We're not there yet. We're still in step one. We'll get there.
So what's
this mean? Belina had to address it. If I haven't addressed it by the end, then please. Yeah.
That
he's kin lo mimenu, that he prepared for him. From him, from him, mimenu binyan adei ad. So I'm saying that the point is that this relationship is a permanent structure. This relationship between the husband and wife has the potential to be permanent because it's mimenu. That's the idea of the Rivah, basically. Okay, there's another Ramban in Perek Mem Vav of Breishit, Pasuk Chavav, where he says, "Katav Rav Menachem Shlomo, who divrei ha'omer to umot noldu im ha'shvatim," according to the opinion that the shvatim were all born with a twin sister. Tzrichim anu lamar shemetu kodem yiratam lemitzrayim sharei lo nimnukan. Okay? He says, how come when you look at the Shivim Nefesh, these midrashic twin sisters don't appear in the count? Right? So if you believe that there were twin sisters, according to that opinion, where are they? So they must have died by now. That's what, right? Says the Ramban, that's what Rashi says. Says the Ramban, v'ein tzarich lezeh. You don't need to say that. That's a little bit of a dolchak. You don't need to say such a thing. Why? Sharei amru, Rabbi Yehuda omer lachiyotehem nisu ashvatim. Because the whole point is that then the shvatim married those sisters. So those sisters were, in fact, they weren't just daughters of Yaakov, but also daughter-in-laws. Rabbi Yehuda, Mizah Katuv Amar Kein, Kimatam Lemar Milvad Neshei Bnei Yaakov Akananiot, Acharei Shamar Yotzei Yerecho. In other words, we're only counting descendants of Yaakov. So if we're only counting descendants of Yaakov, why do we need to exclude the wives? Right? Why does it say besides the wives? I mean, of course you're not counting the wives, because the wives are not Yotzei Yerecho, right? They're not descendants of Yaakov. So why is it excluding? Why is it saying besides them? We're not counting them. Rakbish Bavur Neshei Banav Gamhem Yotzei Yerecho, who are also, this is the whole source for Rabbi Yehuda, since they were in fact his descendants. Avalo Pirsei Motam Bekan Kasholos Kiran Be'et Leidatan Mashvatim Ve'od. And here's the part that's relevant to us. Ve'od Lo Yizkir Heina Rak Asher Yolidu Vitrabu Mitzrayim Lo Diyah Hanetz HaGadol Nasab Rivor Atzum Asher Abu Mitzrayim Ve'em B'zeh Shem Nefesh U'Nesheihem Lo Yimnu. But the wives are not counted. Why? Ki Ha'ish Im Ishto Hu Echad. Okay, because the husband and wife count as one. Now, if you take a look at this sheet that I gave you, okay, everyone please turn to the Ramban.
That was the second one.
Yes. Hang on for 1 second. Look at the Ramban. Okay, the Ramban, yes, yeah, the Ramban here, Ramban in, this is the same Ramban, okay, Perek Mem Vav. But I'd like you to take a look at the bottom of the page in the Shevel Ramban, okay? Which, of course, anytime you're doing a Ramban, there's no other way to do it other than from the Shevel Ramban. I'm not saying that there's no room for improvement, but it's the best that we have. And it's amazing. And he did it with all of the critiques and anything. And it's an amazing job, the Shevel Ramban. Okay, sorry, Dr. Shevel, he did an incredible service, and his work has been stolen by others who, whatever, whole story, Haredi publishers and whatever, who at the very least, because they don't want to have a Mosada Rav Kook edition of Rabban, so, you know, to get him printed under whatever, it's a mess. But anyhow, the point is, really, really, they you know, I'm saying, only way to learn Ramban is from the Shevel Ramban. This, in the Torah Chaim, is based on the Shevel Ramban, but it doesn't have everything that the Shevel Ramban has. Okay, but this isn't a this isn't a rip. This is a Mosada Rav Kook. This. I don't think there's a good answer to that, so we'll leave that. Okay. Anyhow, so one of those very strange things. What can I tell you? So he really, you should know that, like, really, if you use the Shevel Ramban, there's so many advantages. He did so much to make the Ramban more understandable. For one thing, he points out that the Ramban always talks in Shibbutz. The Ramban takes phrases from Psukim and Gemaras and Midrashim and takes them without modifying them and sticks them in. And very often you don't understand what he's saying because it's Zakar instead of Nekeva, or it's Rabim instead of Yachid, or whatever. And it just doesn't, you don't know what he's saying, but it's because he's taking a piece from someplace else. And if you realize that, it just helps so much. He also gives you an anthology of many, many Mefarshim, and it's just very useful. And, you know, sometimes what the Mefarshim have to say is very, very helpful. and sometimes less helpful, but still, it's important to know what they say. So if you take a look on the bottom of the page, right, in the beer on the bottom, take a look at the first column towards the end of the first chunk. Dira Matu Kia Ish Imishtohu Echad. Look carefully what he has to say. V'kasher lama mana katuv et dina achar asher kvar mana et Shimon ba'alah. It says, one second. But then we're not being consistent, because if you're saying that we didn't count the wives, we're counting the husband and wives as one, so then why do we count Dina, but Dina, according to Chazal, is married to Shimon. V'ein lo mash mikevan shaita lo l'shimon isha acheret. Shemimena noldu lo yimuel v'yamin v'chule l'chach mana katuv et Dina. So, but you want to tell me that's because he had another wife? Sof, Aisha Mishto. O im nashav hakol echad. Okay, so if you're going to count, it's either you count the wives, or you don't count the wives. Make up your mind, right? So if Shimon has two wives, why do we count one of them and not the other? Okay. V'tachein. Okay, this is all a quote from the Nimuke Shmuel. It's a commentary, you know, super commentary. So look at V'tachein. Ki Ramban lo samach ki amaltam arishon shu'ikar. Okay, Ramban, this is not the real reason, it's the first reason. Matam zeh, hu ki Yehuda v'od l'kra. Meaning, this isn't the real reason, this is just an additional point that he throws in, even though it's not necessary, and even though it's not sufficient. Now, what can I say? I'm not terribly convinced that this is the Pshat of the Ramban. I mean, it's just so difficult to say this. It's very difficult to say this. So it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I can say that about the Rambam. I just can't say it. Okay, it's not the Pshat. The Pshat is very simple. I think the Pshat is really very simple. But you have to put the two Rambans together. Okay? And it goes back to the Gemara. Let's go back to the Gemara. And then I think the whole thing will become clear. We'll understand the Ramban without this Dochak of the Nimuke Shmuel. I mean, it's very nice that he points out the problem. And that's valuable in of itself. So the answer is somewhat stronger.
Can you explain this from again?
His answer?
Yeah.
His answer is, the Ramban gave two answers. And he's saying that the real answer is the first answer, and the second is just kind of thrown in. That's what he says.
He doesn't say what they are?
What do you mean? No, he says, the Ramban gives two explanations for why these sisters aren't sisters slash wives are not counted. The idea that Ha'isha Mishtohu Echad is the second suggestion of the Ramban. So he says, you're right, the second one doesn't really work. The Ramban really is somewhat just on the first answer. The real answer is the first answer. And the second is just thrown in as an additional point. Just like, in addition to the fact that in addition to what we said before, we could also, you know, also say this, but that's not really the real reason. I just don't see. What? The first answer, no, that's Rashi's answer. Saying the Ramban has two answers. Ramban's first answer is that it's the point is this answer of Alo Pirsematam Kan Kasholos Kiram Be'elei Datan before the vote. Okay, anyhow, it's just very difficult. So what's going on? Let's go back to the Gemara in Sota and the Gemara in Brachot, and then I think we'll understand what's going on here.
Can you just
say
first answer?
First answer has nothing to do with us. Go through, but Mash has nothing to do with anything.
The first answer,
can you just say what it is in English?
He says basically that, first answer is that they're not mentioned here, just like they're not mentioned when they were born, okay?
According to the Ramban, that's the real answer?
According to the Nimuke Shmuel, he's suggesting that's really the answer, that's the real answer, and then this other thing is just, you know, thrown.
What?
So the he's saying that what the Nimuke Shmuel suggests and rejects, right? Okay, what he suggests and rejects is that, well, we know that he had another wife, so maybe that's why you don't count Dina. But he says that doesn't make any sense, because if you're not counting wives, you're not counting wives. Right? And if you are counting wives, you are counting wives. So why do you count one and not the other? Okay? So I think that there's a very good reason why the Ramban did what he did. I think that the Nimuke Yosef's first, like the suggestion that he throws out, is really the correct one. Okay? But we have to give it a little bit of context. Okay, so here it goes. Here's the suggestion. And this is what I think is really going on in all these sources. Gemara, let's go back to Gemara and Sota. Okay? Let's go back to Gemara and Sota. Gemara says that we have two ideas. One idea is Kashim Lazavkan Kikriyat Yamsuf. They're two individuals. Okay? It's very difficult to create a partnership of two individuals. We have two separate people and they're supposed to function as one. That's very difficult. It's as difficult as taking water and splitting the two, because it's not its nature. Right? Just like water is innately one and you're trying to make it into two, here you're taking two individuals and trying to make them into one. It's not simple. On the other hand, we have the statement of Rav that this is exactly the natural state. Arbam Yom Kol Mitzirat Tafalat. These two people were created as two halves of one individual. What do you mean they're not two individuals that were sticking together, that are being, you know, thrown together? Lehefech. These are two halves of one person that were created as one person, separated at birth, and then, you know, they're reunited. So what's the, you know, the easiest thing in the world? So which is it? So Gemara says, Zugrishon Zugsheni. What does Zugrishon Zugsheni mean? So if you throw in the Rambam, it makes perfect sense. The Gemara, I think, is saying as follows. Yes, the way that human beings are created, this is really long lines of the Raivan and the Ramban, right? That human beings are created as two halves of one person. That's how we're created. Arbam yom kol mitzirat tavlad, bat kol yotzei v'amer b'aploin. I say that's literal, but the idea behind it is that human beings are created as two halves of one whole. They're really two halves of one person. And therefore, they're being brought together as one is totally natural. It's not unnatural, it's the most natural thing in the world. However, there is a very important qualification. And that qualification is what the Rambam talks about. Hakol bidei shamayim chutz mirat shamayim. Meaning that I'm created with another half. So we both exist out there, and we're created that way. Very nice. But does that mean that I have to marry that person? Does that mean that that person has to marry me? No, it's b'chira chavshe. In other words, there is such a thing as what our natural destiny is, what is created to be, you know, the appropriate and natural and ideal thing for us. But we don't always choose that. And sometimes there are other things that happen in life which get in the way of our even having the opportunity to choose that. Therefore, there's such a thing as Zug Rishon and Zug Shein. What does Zug Rishon and Zug Shein mean? Zug Rishon means where that's the primary Zug. That's the way it was originally intended. It was intended. This is the person. This is the other half. So therefore, about that we say what? However, there's another scenario. Because what if I make other decisions in my life? I that's not what I choose. So then what happens? Okay, so we may end up marrying totally different people. In that case, how does the Gemara describe that scenario? That's the Kashim Lazavgan Kikriyat Yamsuf. Now, it is possible to marry someone else and to, through great effort, to make it work. It's possible also to start with, you know, it being natural and being, you know, being intended v'chule, and to still to mess it up, because again we have the element of b'chira chavshit. However, in terms of what the you know, whether we're going with the grain or against the grain, whether it's easy or hard, that depends a lot on whether it's zug rishon or zug sheni. That's why Mara says that the kashm l'zavgan can create yamsu, but that's by zug sheni. That's if it's not the primary, not the original, it's secondary. So, and that's why I think the Rambam talks about here in his tshuva. Okay.
I understand, like, what if Zugrisha decides that they don't want that, so then you just get messed up? Like,
I think that, as tragic as that is, I think that that's true. And it's in the same sense that what happens if, you know, if someone goes and exercises their Bechira Chafsha and kills an innocent person, you know. So there are, and Ezra Hashem will discuss this, it's on the agenda to discuss. There is such a thing as real consequences to the fact that human beings have b'chira chafshe. Okay, but that's worthy of a whole separate discussion by itself. But absolutely.
Like I'm saying, like maybe young kids who die, or like boys who die in the army, like
right.
Are they leaving, or is that part of Hashem's plan? Are they leaving, like, you know, future widow? Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So I think that's part of what the Rambam talks about, that there, you know, that's also part of, you know, in the same sense that there are all kinds of things that, you know, that are very tragic that happen in life and that can happen, that, you know, that's what we're talking about in terms of Zug Rishon and Zug Sheni, that there are scenarios in which it takes a tremendous effort because we're dealing with Zug Sheni. That doesn't mean it's not possible. But I think that there are such scenarios. I think that we see empirically there's such a thing.
But it's only frivol to an extent, because, like, God's not going to put your Zug Rishon in China if you're living in America. Like,
so that's already a secondary point that I think is also an interesting other aspect that I don't think these sources are addressing per se, but I hear what you're saying, right? The other side of the coin is that, you know, that the fact that we have free will doesn't mean that all options are always open to us, right? And that's important to it. So, yeah.
So if it's Zug Rishon, then that's not Kashin Lazavgan.
Right. But that's what the Gemara, right.
So like
that Kashin Lazavgan means where it's unnatural, right? Where you're overcoming the what's natural because you're taking two individuals and making one person them. That's Zug Sheni. But where it's Zug Rishon, so then it's Arbam Yom Kom Yisera Tavlad. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I think the Gemara in Brachot is saying. They say Matzah Omotze. What does Matzah Omotze mean? What do the words mean? Matzah, what's Matzah? What does Matzah mean? You found, right? In the words, that you found that person who was, you know, Arbam Yom Kom Yisera Tavlad. That's the Zug Rishon scenario. And the other scenario is motze, right? You are finding, you're trying to make this work, but it's not that you found that person. And that's why we were saying that there's a big difference between the natural tendency of, you know, the natural prognosis, where you're talking about Zug Rishon, where you're talking about Zug Sheni. Okay. Back to the Ramban. So I just want to suggest a simple idea, Lishitas on the Ramban. The Ramban, after all, following the footsteps of the Ravid, the Ramban says to us that basically this idea is very much picked up by the Ramban. Right? The Ramban says that the creation of Adam and Chava is a paradigm for mankind in general. Right? What does that mean? That means that the way that we're created is to be two parts of one person, not as two distinct individuals. Anyone here? Right? That's what the Ramban says in Bereishit, right? I mean, Parsha Bereishit. Therefore, I would argue that that's what the Ramban means when he says, I think it very much fits with, he says, "V'nishehem lo yimnu." Why? Ki ha'ish im ishto hu echad, because they're really one person. But one second. When we said they're really one person, is that true by Zug Sheni or only by Zug Rishon? See, perhaps Rav is saying that that's, that idea is dafka true, that they're really one person. That's not true about someone who, to put this very crudely, not someone who happens to be his wife, but someone who is the wife. And therefore, if Shimon has two wives, right, then by definition, one of them is a Zug Rishon, one's a Zug Sheni. I may or may not, you know, be able to tell you which one is which, but one thing is clear, and maybe you can deduce it from the Torah, maybe not, whatever, but that's a different... But the point is, what the Nimuke Shmuel said originally, what he, the suggestion that he makes and rejects, I think makes a lot of sense in the Ramban. In other words, to say that you're going to count one of the wives together with Shimon, but not both, makes a tremendous amount of sense. Because it's not a question of, well, wives don't count. That's not what the Ramban's saying. Ramban's saying that we're counting the husband and wife as one person. But that's the concept of Zug Rishon, right? That's not saying that anyone who's married to him is not going to be counted. It's saying that the person who is the other half, so, no, that's, you know, the Gemara says in Yevamot that a man who's not married is considered only half a person. Why? Because of this concept. So, by the same token, we're saying that ha'ish v'ish tu hu echad, but you can't say that about both wives if there are two wives. You want to say that about one of the wives. So if the pshat is that if the Ramban were to be saying, as I think the Nimuke Yosef understood it incorrectly, Maneadaiti, the Nimuke Shmuel, I think, understands it to mean simply that we're not counting wives, we're only counting husbands, we're not counting wives. That's not what the Ramban says. And it's totally not what the Ramban means. But it's not even what the Ramban says. The Ramban doesn't say that we're not counting wives because wives don't count. Chas v'shalom is saying that we're counting the husband and the wife as one person. But why would you do that? Because of what the Ramban says in the beginning of Bereishit, Perek Bet. Okay, but that only applies to Zug Rishon. It doesn't apply to Zug Sheni. If you have two wives, right? So, aside from everything else, one, you know, all the other problems that entails, but they simply, clearly they're not both Zug Rishon, so we're not going to say Ish V'Ishto, Hu Echad, about both of the wives. We can most say it about one of them. And so the Nimuke Yosef, the Nimuke Shmuel, sorry, is Kasha, on the Ramban. I think it's not a kasha at all if you understand the Ramban properly. That's a whole separate discussion. Okay. No, I mean, I'm not saying it's not relevant. I'm just saying that's involved. No, I'm saying that so it could well be that, you know, that because the whole idea of Chazal is that he married Dina really as, you know, as a chesed to her because of the fact that, you know, that after Lishlem, everything that she was going to have trouble finding a husband, so she, you know, he married her. But the point is that it's very possible that you know, the whole point, again, we're dealing with Midrashim. I'm not saying that this is Pshat. I'm saying but the approach that Ramban is suggesting here, and again, it starts with Rashi himself only says, according to the opinion that, so how do you fit into the psukim? Right? So Ramban is saying, as he often does, well, if you take that approach, so this is what you know what it makes sense to say. Yes.
So it's only Ishim Yishtovuachad for this Zug Rishon?
Right, because I think that it is a reflection of this idea that the Gemara is talking about Abraham Yom Kom Yisrael Taflav, but that's not talking about anyone you're married to, it's talking about the person who was created, you know, to be the other half. Yeah.
This is a question not about Zug, but like, why would Chazal assume that there were twin sisters when, like, they weren't mentioned and they only mentioned Dina, and then even when they were married, they weren't mentioned? Why would they assume?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I mean, I'm just not, you know, holding it. I don't know. I'm quite sure they had a good reason for suggesting, but what they were trying to say in there, I don't know. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So what's with Dina's, Zug Rishon? She doesn't get any?
So again, I think it goes back to the fact that I'm not saying for sure that that's true about Dina, but according to the suggestion, I think the point would be that that there are clearly times, as you explained, I think, very well, that there are times where, you know, the ideal destiny of a person doesn't pan out for one reason or another because of factors of Bechir Chavshid or other factors that come into play. And this is something that the Rambam alludes to as well. Right? Okay. There are two basic points that, again, I think emerges from this. I'm not saying this is the only approach by any means. I'm trying to share with you an understanding of certain sources in Chazal. I'm not saying, and Farsh, I'm not saying this is the only approach. It's an approach. But what this approach suggests is that, on the one hand, there is this concept of, for lack of a better word, say Bashar, whatever, in terms of in terms of potential, in terms of that being a possibility that exists. But, as the Rambam says very clearly, and I think that this is a very important point, that does not mean that it is, you know, that a person that's predetermined, that a person is necessarily going to marry this person or that person or not. That is a question of many things, including Bechira Chavshit, not limited to, but including, and I'm saying that there's an aspect of Hashkacha, and that certainly is. It's a tremendous aspect. It's also an aspect of Bechira. Yeah.
So just to clarify the Matzah
Motzei
thing, so Matzah is Zuzushan Motzei Zuzushini. So is that saying that the Zuzushini is worse to marry the Zuzushan, or that it's just harder to make it work than if it was your natural destiny?
I'm not sure I understand the difference between the two. I didn't catch the difference between the two.
Okay, so matzah is the positive term, right? And that they're using in reference to zug rishon, mm-hmm. Would say is more negative, and they're using zug sheni. So they're saying that zug sheni will never be like as great of a relation as zug rishon, or is it just saying that it's harder, it takes more effort to make it work because it's not your natural?
So I don't know about that one source, but in totality, I'm suggesting the second, that it's more difficult, you know, it's more unnatural. It's the idea of kashmir is opposite. Yeah. That's what I think is alluded to. That. Okay, Beseder? Okay, a little bit of food for thought. Okay. That's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question.
But I know it says that since the Nisim Hagash is destroyed, people don't marry their Zuzushan.
Really?
I didn't hear that from him. I heard that from
someone
else. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I'm not. Do you know what the basis for that is?
No, we didn't ask him.
I mean, I can think of one source in Chazal, but I don't know that necessarily.
Why were they running around screaming that?
Yeah, they're all.
Kill on your shirt! Kill on your shirt! They're all
going
crazy. What about a man, let's say that his zug rishon decision that he is available to him, and I don't know if that the zug sheni is so unappealing to him, he's still looking for his zug rishon, and then they end up having a problem completing
the mitzvah of
and then,
but it's not his fault. So, is he
trying
to settle? You know what I mean?
It's really interesting. I mean, I would think that the answer is yes, but again, by settle,
you said it's hard. It's hard, right?
So, but I mean, there are a lot of things in life that are hard.
But marriage shouldn't be like it shouldn't be one of those things that is difficult
to do. Yeah. I hear that, but again, I mean, I don't want to. You know, I think that again, the point is, you know, that the words of Gemara here, I think I chose very carefully, the caution, meaning that it's a challenge. Not saying that it's a bad thing, but it's a challenge. That's, you know, it's not the same natural, you know, ease, but. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's what I would think of. Yeah. But, okay. We'll move on to the next topic, if that's okay. No, not okay. Go ahead.
Shut that up.
Okay.
But does that mean that you're real?